Well, I'm sitting in one of those driver awareness courses. You been on any of those? And I'm wondering to myself, how did this happen? I'm a good driver. I don't go rushing around. And anyway, I was only doing 34 in a 30-mile-an-hour limit up Twyford Road. How could I be here? And I agree with everything they say to me, particularly when it comes to the point that a child can be knocked over and killed at a certain miles an hour, and if you're going a little bit less, they may just be injured. I'm thinking, yes. Why would anyone do 34 miles an hour up Twyford Road, knowing all this information? Of course, and I'm one of those good people who doesn't speed around. Well, don't talk to my wife anyway, but who doesn't speed around from place to place. And yet here I am on this driver awareness course. A few years later, I find myself on a driver awareness course, another one, you realise, wondering the same things. How did this happen? How could I be here again? I'm agreeing with everything they say all over again. I even passed a little test at the end. How could this be? It's just too busy. Just too busy, rushing from one thing to next. In fact, I remember the first one. In fact, the second one was I didn't really know where I was going and didn't take note of the speed restriction as I entered into the zone. But the first one, I remember that day very well. I remember being down here, and I know Tim was, he was playing football. He was doing some football training in the summer over at Coldham Common. And I knew that it all ended at a certain time, and I had to be there to pick him up. He was only, we hadn't been here long in Eastleigh, so he was only, I don't know, about this tall. And I was desperate to get there because I was running late, and for some reason, meetings had overrun, and someone had stopped me on the way out, and I chatted, and I rushed into the car, and I thought, I've got to get there. And I knew I was going to be late anyway, so I've got to get there as speedily as possible. So I'm driving up Twyford Road at 34 miles an hour, thinking it's all going to make a difference, because I was just too busy, just too busy. Have you ever been in that situation where you're just too busy? Were you rushing around from place to place? Well, I think it's something that's common to us all. I don't think it's just me. I think it's common to us all that from time to time we just find ourselves in that place of real busyness. And actually, I think it's a very much a modern day thing where busyness is very much part of the society in which we live in. And I am aware that I've kind of commented and said stuff about time and busyness and rushing and organisation and all that kind of stuff in bits and pieces over the last few years at least. But I wanted to just look at this topic of busyness, because we're often too busy. We often feel that we're too busy. And actually, often it's said that the church is too busy, or we're too busy doing Christian things as well. So I want to look at this whole issue of busyness and to get it in some kind of context and right perspective. I want to make a couple of comments first. Firstly, a word about time. Time is one of those things that is equal. There's equality in time, isn't there? Now, some of you are wealthier people than me, and others are poorer than I am. So when it comes to money, you know, there isn't equality. It's all different. We all earn different amounts of money. When it comes to time, we all have the same amount of time. So time is not like money. There is equality with time. But with time, as with money, actually, we have the choice of how to use our time. Have you ever heard that statement? Perhaps you've said it. I don't have time. Do you know, most of the time, that's a lie. It's not honest. What you're actually saying when you say, I don't have time, as it was illustrated in the situation with Deirdre. Who is Deirdre, anyway? I don't even know a Deirdre in that illustration. It's actually what we're saying when we say, I don't have time. We're actually saying, I don't want to spend my time doing that thing. Sometimes Sue will say to me, we can't afford it. And I say to her, we can if we want to. It depends what it is, of course. Yeah, if it's a new swimming pool, not that we've got a swimming pool in the garden room. If it's a swimming pool in the garden, we probably wouldn't be able to afford that. But if it is something that's affordable, but Sue says we can't afford it, what she means is I don't want to spend our money on that. But we could actually stop spending our money on this, that, and the other, and by that. So it's a similar thing in terms of time. When we say, I don't have time, we do have time. It's just whether we want to use that time for that particular thing. And therefore, we choose how we use our time. But it's also worth noting, and I think this is important, that with time, different people are able to achieve different things. depending on your gifting, depending on your ability, depending on your efficiency, your effectiveness, that varies across people. So to kind of suggest that although we all have the same amount of time, that we can all achieve the same thing would be rather foolish and unfair. So from different people to different people, although we have the same amount of time, we achieve different things and at different rates. Let me say a few words then about busy, or the word busy, or busyness. The word busy, did you know, rarely appears in the Bible? It's about 6 or 7 verses in the Bible, and some of them aren't really about busyness that we're talking about today. In fact, actually, you could argue, and I would argue this, that busyness is very much a modern-day concept. Busyness is very much, not completely, and I'm not suggesting there aren't moments of busyness in the Bible, there are moments of busyness in the Bible, but generally, the kind of busyness that we're talking about is very much a modern-day concept. We have more communication, more information available to us. There's more that demands our time, isn't there? All the time, constantly, things are demanding our time, and we have more and better technology which allows us to do things more quickly. So the expectation on us is to do more, more, more. And we generally live in that kind of a society. And sometimes we actually believe that we can do more. But in the Bible, there isn't the same thing. So when you come to the Bible to say, what does the Bible talk about busyness? It's actually quite a difficult thing. However, there are clear moments in the Bible where there is busyness. I mean, Jesus was pretty busy at times. You know, if you look at Luke 4, verses 40 to 41, you see that he had a busy day, healing people, teaching people, and releasing people from demons. That's quite a full day's work. You know, that's pretty busy. Paul writes in 2 Corinthians when he's defending his apostleship and his ministry. In 2 Corinthians 11, he lists a whole load of things. Actually, if you ever read that, it's quite exhausting reading it, all the things that he goes through. Much of them is suffering. But in the midst of that, he says this. He says, I have labored and toiled. I have often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst and have gone without food. I have been cold and naked. That sounds pretty busy. So there are these moments, and we could point to one or two others. There are these moments where there is busyness within the Bible. Just going back to the modern day concept, I do think that busyness is probably a dangerous disease. How did you describe it? You described it as something like that. What was the term? Tyranny of the urgent. Right? I like that. Wish I'd come up with that, John. That's really good. Yeah, I think it could be the modern day disease within our society that we're kind of busy, rushing from thing to thing. The Achilles heel of both society generally, but also dangerously possibly the church as well, when we keep ourselves busy. And I ask the question why that may be, and often busyness is synonymous with successfulness. If we are perceived to be busy, then we're perceived to be successful. Do you remember those Filofaxes? Some people are sitting, like, this row here is sitting there going, what? Filofax? What's a Filofax? Back in the 80s, many, many years ago, there were these things called Filofaxes. They were pre-mobile phones with your diary on your mobile phone, and you actually, he still has one. It's so sad. And you put all your stuff in there, and it was great having a file. I remember the first Filofax I had, I thought I'd made it. You know, before that, I didn't even have a diary. I didn't need a diary. My life was so sad that I didn't have anything in my life. And so I just retained it all in my head. I knew what was going on most of the time. But then my life got busy. And one day, I decided to go to W.H. Smith's and buy a Filofax. I really felt I'd entered the world. And now we've all got these sophisticated mobile phones and technology and all that kind of stuff. But our lives are busy, busy, busy. If we're receiving lots of emails, lots of texts, putting lots of things in our diary, is a perception that we somehow have become successful. And the busier we are, the more successful we are. I'm going to suggest to you, obviously, that what a nonsense that all is. Your busyness actually isn't successfulness. But we can confuse, though, what being busy and successful actually is all about. So let me Let me throw, I forget how many points I've got, but let me throw these at you and then you can kind of respond, or you can bring your own wisdom to the room as well when we share a little bit later. So first thing I wanted to say this, is being busy isn't the sin. I want you to, if you've got a Bible nearby, I want you to turn to Luke chapter 7. And if you were to think of a passage about busyness, this is one that may have come to mind. So Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42. I'll just read this to you. You know this, some of you know this story. Luke 10, sorry. Did I say 7? Yeah. Luke 10, sorry, verses 38 to 42. So this is the story about Martha and Mary. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman called Martha opened her home to him. Wow. Well done, Martha. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparation that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Now, at first glance, and I have heard this said, you know, that people have preached a kind of anti-busyness sermon around this passage. And you can argue that case. Martha, the problem with Martha is that she was too busy. She was too busy in the kitchen preparing everything that she kind of missed the point. But actually, that is not the sin here. That is not the problem here. Because I wanted to suggest to you that Mary was also busy, wasn't she? She was busy. Mary was busy. What was Mary busy doing? Mary was busy listening to Jesus. So being busy, if we define busy as having a full life, being busy is not the issue. The issue is what you're being busy with. That's the issue. That's the thing that we need to think about. What are we choosing to be busy with? You know, there are 60 seconds to a minute, 60 minutes to an hour, 20, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and 52 weeks in a year, apparently. And we will fill those seconds, minutes, hours, and days with something. And you actually will fill them with something. The question is what? What are you going to fill your life with? Is it going to be filled with work, family, TV, social media, sports, sleep? Some are just wishing for more of that. I'm with you on that one. More sleep. Gaming or games, hobbies, walking the dog, DIY, holidaying, or could we fill our lives with prayer, worship, God's word, sharing our faith, serving God? One of the things, I mean, is that fascinating? When you do look up the word busy, actually busy is more positive in the few verses that the Bible talks about than actually we often give it credit for. But the Bible kind of says, time and time again, it's what you're being busy in that's the most important thing. Haggai 1, verse 9, is one of the few verses that has the word busy in it. And God says to the people of Israel, says this, "You expected much, but see, it turned out to be little. What you brought home, I blew away." Why, declares the Lord Almighty? "Because of my house, which remains a ruin, while each of you is busy with your own house." Here is a situation, a scenario where God actually comes and speaks very clearly to the people of Israel. And he says to them, "You've been busy." Oh yeah, you've been really, really busy. And it's not the fact that you're busy, it's not the fact that your lives are full. Actually, that's okay. Your lives can be full, and we'll look at that in a moment. It's okay, actually, to be busy. If you're a busy person, can I just say to you, it's all right to be busy. It may be all right. It just depends what you're being busy with. If you're being busy with the wrong things, then it isn't all right. But busyness in itself is not a sin. And God isn't actually saying that. That's not in Scripture at all, in any shape, form, or fashion. In fact, in some ways, actually, the Bible leans towards a busier life with the Lord. than a quieter life for the Lord, actually. And we'll look at one or two examples of that in a moment. But the issue is what you're being busy with. And if we, busy society, are being busy with the wrong things, then God has something to say to us. If we're busy with our things, filling our lives with all the things that we want rather than the things that he wants, if we're building our homes rather than his house of worship, the temple which God is worshipped today, which is the church, the body of Jesus Christ, then we could be in trouble. We could be in trouble. Second thing I wanted to say is that slowing down isn't a sin either. So if you're inclined to thinking, actually, I need to slow down a bit, that's okay. That's okay. I think Chris mentioned this this book called The 3 Mile an Hour God by, how do you say his name? Kosuke Koyami, I think, or something like that. I haven't read this book, but I love the title. And when Chris mentioned it, I've Googled it, and I'm going to buy it for my sabbatical. It's one of the books that I'm going to read in my sabbatical. I love the sound of this book, The 3 Mile an Hour God. And when Chris mentioned this a few weeks ago, I thought, crumbs, yeah, you know what? Jesus, the divine amongst us, he didn't go rushing from one place to the next to the other, but he paced himself. I love going on the canals. Anyone like canals? I love the canals. I have this dream of when we retire, of living on a canal boat. I don't know whether it's going to happen, but it's just a little dream that I have. But I just love the pace, because the canal boat goes at 3 miles an hour. Well, 4 if you open it up a bit, but no more than that. And whenever we are on a canal boat, which is not very often, but when we are on a canal boat, there is a sense that life just slows down. And there is time, and there is space. There's a lovely, lovely quote from this book that I discovered. I'll just read it to you. Love has its speed. It's a spiritual speed. It's a different kind of speed from the technological speed to which we are accustomed. It goes in the depths of our lives, whether we notice it or not, at 3 miles an hour. It is the speed we walk, and therefore the speed the love of God walks. Now, sometimes there are moments when we need to stop and realize we need to slow down. And that's okay. Because I don't want anyone to go away thinking, actually, spiritual maturity is about being busy. I'm not suggesting that in one shape, form, or fashion. As I was pondering this 3 mile an hour God, I thought, oh, maybe there's another book to be written here about the one thing at a time God. Do you notice that Jesus does one thing at a time? Trying to just think about the Gospels and all the situations, the scenarios that Jesus finds himself. And it's just one thing at a time. One thing at a time. Even when he's going to Jairus' house and the woman who's bleeding is after him through the crowd and reaching out, and you think, oh, Joth, here's a passage where there's two things going at once. No, there isn't. Because when the woman touches him, Jesus is not rushing on. He stops. And he spends time with that dear woman in the midst of her need and her healing and her forgiveness. And he spends time when a little girl is dying, because he's got time for her. And then Jairus receives news that his daughter has died, doesn't he? And you think, oh, okay, here we go, Jesus. You should have been rushing on. No. And actually, let's take comfort from this. For us who rush from place to place, God knows. God knows the whole circumstance, the whole situation. What is it in us that thinks we have to rush one thing to the next? As if somehow we can make a difference. But he can. He can hold death there while he deals with something else. And he said, I'll get to you when I get to you, because he's in control of it. And he deals with the woman. He restores her. And then he goes and raises the little girl back to life again. The one thing at a time, God. Point three, then, is if slowing down and busyness isn't the sin, what is? Well, let me suggest to you that laziness might be the sin when it comes to time. There is much, much, much more written in Scripture about laziness. I don't have time to go through it all. I'm just going to give you, well, two verses, actually. First one comes from Ecclesiastes. I love this little proverb. Ecclesiastes 10, verse 18. Through laziness, the rafters sag. Because of idle hands, the house leaks. This is very pertinent and relevant to us at the moment, because if you've been past my house recently in the last couple of weeks, you would have noticed some scaffolding up. And for the last, well, probably 4 years, we have had a leak that comes in through Tim's bedroom. And when there's a storm, particularly at night time, water begins to flow into Tim's bedroom. And we have no reason why. We haven't worked out why that happens, but it has happened. And we have sat on this in a lazy fashion for some time, eventually getting a roof around to actually look at the thing and go up there and actually discover what's wrong and repair the roof. So I feel condemned as I look at this little proverb of being a lazy so-and-so. But the truth is, I mean, it makes you smile, doesn't it? If you're lazy about your roof and your roof is sagging and it's leaking and you kind of go, nah, can't be bothered. Can't be bothered. What's going to happen? The roof, can I suggest, is going to come tumbling in, isn't it? It's going to eventually collapse. In fact, I passed a house the other day and its roof was falling in. I thought, my roof could have been like that. If I hadn't got something done, that my roof could have been eventually like that. Laziness, actually, according to Scripture, is a real risk. That if we are lazy, it's interesting, actually, in our society, is because busyness is held at such high esteem that actually sometimes the most lazy people are the busiest. Have you noticed that? The most lazy people are the busiest because they spend all their time thinking about how they tell everyone that they're lazy. Oh, they're busy, sorry. Let's get it around the right way. But actually, the truth is they're not doing anything. That if they were busy, they wouldn't have time to boast about how busy they were. If you think about it. Paul writes to Timothy. Timothy 5, verse 13, he says, this is about young widows. Besides, they get into the habit of being idle and going about from house to house. Not only do they become idlers, but also busy bodies who talk nonsense, saying things that they ought not to. And he's saying, look, the danger here is, and he's dealing with these in a pastoral situation, and we're not going to look at that whole passage, so you know, don't get hung up about him having a go at young widows. It's a much bigger thing going on here, but there is the potential for us all to be idle, to actually not use our time well, to busy our time, to fill our time with nothing. And therefore, we become busy bodies. Because when you've got all the time in the world to do nothing, then the only thing you're going to do is comment on everyone else's lives and look at them. And there is actually a real danger that if we don't fill our lives with the things of God and the kingdom of God, we can become idle people or lazy people. I could give you a whole load of proverbs from Proverbs that talk about laziness time and time and time again. Let me go on to my next point. Busyness can be a distraction, though, from the most important things. Going back to the Martha and Mary story. I mean, that Martha and Mary story is just absolutely fantastic. I mean, I don't know if you've ever stopped and really thought about that story. The fact that Mary was sitting at the feet of Jesus and listening to him promoted women into a place that women would never have been seen. Martha, culturally, was absolutely bang on. Mary, what are you doing there? Our role is in the kitchen. Our role is in the preparation. Our role is doing all those things. And Jesus says, no, Martha, Mary has chosen the best thing. I mean, if you think the gospel writers are sexist, you have an issue with me in this passage. Because this passage actually says women, too, are allowed to come to the feet of the rabbi. Women weren't educated, but Mary had chosen the best thing to sit at the very feet of Jesus himself. That's just a side point, by the way. It's not got nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I wanted to throw that out. It's just a remarkable passage. But the issue with Martha here is that she actually gets distracted of the things of the world. That's what Jesus says to her. You're worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. And Mary has chosen what is better. You're worried about all this preparation and the things of life, and you're getting distracted by the most important thing. And in busy lives, this is probably one of the key issues for us, is what are we getting distracted by? What is important and what isn't important? And discovering those things that are really important, the things of God, the things that God wants to do in our lives and through us, and working out what isn't important. I didn't know whether I wanted to share this. Actually, after this morning, I thought Chris really challenged us as a church this morning, so I didn't wonder whether I should share this. But I'll throw it out anyway, and this is not a judgment of anyone, but my heart sinks sometimes after a really challenging word from the Lord on a Sunday morning. And we get up to sing a hymn of worship, and I see people go in to do things. You know, maybe getting something ready or preparing for tea and coffee. And I sometimes think, why? Why does that become important? You know, God has spoken into the congregation and maybe into your life. And why are we rushing off to do the next thing? Your coffee can make itself, can't it? Well, it can't, but who cares? You know, if the first people to get there for coffee can't make a cup of coffee, well, we'll train them one day. You know, if God is doing something in your life, allow God to do that thing in your life rather than being distracted by the next thing. I mean, I actually fall into this trap. I mean, I sometimes sit there on a Grand Prix Sunday. I have to deal with this with the Lord regularly. I'll be sitting there on a Sunday evening service thinking, don't be too long, because I've recorded the Grand Prix, and the only time I've got this week to watch the Grand Prix is between 8:30 and 10:30. So get on with it, because I want to be out here by 8:30. And you might be sitting there. It wasn't the Grand Prix this week, but your program, whatever it is. And we get caught up in getting distracted by the things of the world rather than actually saying, what's God doing amongst us? That's just the context of church, but that happens time and time and time again in all kinds of aspects of life. What's really important and what isn't important? Do you know, one day, I'll tell you this story very quickly. But we were around, when we were in Billericay Baptist Church, we were around at someone's house after coffee. They had problems with coffee in their church. They couldn't get coffee. So they did this thing where we had to go to people's homes. So we had to travel to someone else's home to have coffee after church. And we went around to this person. And we were fairly new to the church. And people kept talking to us. And I was like looking at my watch. And it was in the days when we didn't record the Grand Prix. And it went off at 1:00. And I kept looking at my watch. Well, I didn't have a watch, whatever the time was. And I remember getting in the car at 1:04 and flying down the road, almost skidding to a stop outside my house, jumping out the car and rushing in, because these things just we get caught up in them, don't we? And I had to stop myself and think, what's all this about, Joff? What is all this about? Does it really matter that Damon Hill wins? It gets his. Do you remember him? This lot don't. This lot do. And we get distracted by the things of the world. And next one, what is it that motivates us behind our busyness or our drivenness, as I've written down here? Why are we so busy? And this is a question that sometimes we need to stop and ask ourselves. Why are we trying to do more and more and more? Are we striving for significance? Maybe. Are we trying to keep people happy so that they like us and love us? And sometimes those people who can't say no, that's actually part of the reason they keep saying yes to things, is they don't want to let anyone down. And they want that person to like them, to love them. And therefore they keep saying, okay, I'll do the next thing, I'll do the next thing. Are we afraid? Are we fearful of a whole range of different things? Are we afraid of surplus time? Some of us are. One of my biggest fears is having an empty diary. I mean, that would be terrible. I mean, if I had an empty diary, I wouldn't know what to do. I think this is like awful. Are you in that place where you're afraid of surplus time or being seen as being a lazy person? So we've already talked about. Or are you just afraid of letting things go? Are you one of these control freaks that has to kind of control everything and hold everything, and therefore everything just gets piled into your bucket? Because you're pretty good at it. You've trained yourself to control things really, really well. And therefore, you carry everything along. And you're fearful of letting go of something and letting others have responsibility. That's a really important question to ask. What is our motivation? What is the why behind our busyness? Let me give you some practical suggestions, and then we'll open up the floor for people to make some comments and perhaps some even better suggestions as well. So these follow in a kind of an order. My suggestion is around this area, if you find yourself in a place of busyness, why don't you do some of this? Firstly, do what I call a time audit. So occasionally you do a money audit, do a time audit. Sit down and work out what you're spending your time doing. If you're saying, I'm too busy to do this, find time, because it could transform your life. Sit down, work out what you're doing and how much time you're spending on those things. You may actually be surprised. Once you've listed all those things, however long the list might be, then begin to write next to it. Could you just turn me down a bit? I've just got a little bit of echo. Then write down next to all those your reasons why you do those things. What is the motivation behind each and every one of those things? Then go through the list again and grade the list from 0 to 5. 0 being the things of no importance whatsoever. They got no importance whatsoever. And 5 being the things that are most important. Most important. Then eradicate all the 0s immediately. If there is anything in your bucket, in your list of things, that is a 0 of no importance, eradicate it. Get rid of it. Don't do it anymore. Boom, gone, finished. Why are you doing it? If it has no importance, why are you doing it? Then prioritize the rest from 1 to 5, depending on their importance. Most important, 5 gets most time and the best time. The least gets time if it's allowed. So, well, let me say that again. So you take all the 5s and you say, these are the most important things, and I'm going to put these into my diary. You could do this on paper, or you might do it in your head. Preferably do it on paper, because you'll be able to see it. And you take those things, you say, these are the most important. These are the 5s. These are the big things. How much time should I be spending on these 5s? And slot those in to your schedule. The 1s, then you go to the 4s, then you go to the 3s, then you go to the 2s. And if there's any space left for the 2s and the 1s, then that's okay. But if there isn't, those are the ones that drop off. Because you know what happens? The 2s and the 1s take up time, more time and more time. And the 5s get pushed out. Because I bet you, one of the 5s that you put is spending time with my family. Or one of the 5s you'll put is growing in my faith. Or maybe one of the 5s, hopefully you'll put this, is being with God's people and learning from his word together and supporting and encouraging people. And what happens is, and some of the things that take up a lot of time, suddenly you realize that they're not 5s, they're 2s and they're 1s. And the 2s and the 1s often are the things that push the 4s and the 5s out of our diaries, out of our situations. And so what we want to do is put them back in and actually say to the 2s and the 1s, if we have time, you'll go in. But if we don't, you aren't in there anymore. You know, we will cope without you. I want to just say one other little thing about this before I just do one more slide and I'm done, is please remember, and you don't have an option on this, that rest is a number 5. You can all write that down if you want, for those who've got pen and paper. Just in case you're sitting there thinking, my rest, time to rest, is a number 1. Or perhaps a 0. No, I'm telling you now, as your pastor, as your minister, if I'm allowed to, rest is a number 5. It is really important. God said, you are to rest, if God said you are to rest, I think I can pass that on to you as something that is a number five. It's got to be in there. And if you're wondering how much time, it's 1/7 of your time. You know? It's a Sabbath day principle. It's 1/7 of your time. So if you want to work that in, now actually some of you will be doing 2/7 rest. And if you're retired, you may be doing 3/7 rest. I don't know. You may be in a nap in the afternoon every day. I don't know about that. But 1/7 is the minimum. Make sure 1/7 of rest is in there for you. Okay, and what if you say, well, I'm still busy. I'm still too busy. Well, in that case, it's about effectiveness and efficiency, about how you work and what you're doing. And therefore, let me suggest some things. These don't come up on the screen, I'm afraid. So you need to remember these or jot them down. So you need to think about your own preparation and delivery. Sometimes we take too much time to do something because actually we aren't prepared well enough. And what we need to do is spend more time on the preparation and less time on the delivery. So if we prepare ourselves better, then actually we can be more effective. You may need extra training in a certain area. Don't be embarrassed by that. Training is all the way through our lives. So if you need training in a particular area, then go and get that training. You might need help. You might need to go and talk to someone and say, do you know, actually, I've got all this stuff and I'm really struggling to get through it and I'm not very efficient and I'm not very effective. Well, go and talk to someone and allow them to actually bring some, particularly if it's a person that is effective and efficient in that kind of area. Go and talk to them. And you might want to delegate responsibility to someone else. Actually, that's not a bad thing. Start asking someone else to do it. Sometimes we spend loads of time doing things. Can I mention this, Chris? I won't mention the specifics, but Chris and I were having a conversation the other day, and he was talking about something he does in his ministry, and I'm just looking at him doing one of my, what? And eventually I go, why? Why are you doing it, Chris? And he's going, I don't know. And I said, but you're not very good at it. He goes, I know I'm not very good at it, and it's doing my head in, and it takes, and I get stressed by it, and it takes up so much of my time. I'm exaggerating a little bit, Chris, for the sake of everyone else. But, and I said to him, well, get someone else to do it. And he goes, yeah. And he says, but that's going to take time. I said, believe you, the time spent in getting someone to do that for you, and then get them in place. Actually, bless you, Joanne, because I know you've been doing loads of stuff for Chris recently. This has really helped him. Is to put that person in place. The time spent, it's just been worth it because suddenly you're released. Are you not, Chris? You're suddenly released. And you know, I haven't got to worry about that thing anymore because you've got a friend who is actually supporting you and helping you with it. And if you're one of these really busy people who's got so much to do, the only way that you're going to be more effective and more efficient because you've only got that fixed amount of time is to add people to you, build a team. Build a team, whatever it is you're doing. Build a team around you to develop that or support you. So that, because once you build a team, you've got more time, haven't you? You've got two people, you've got double the time. Three people, triple the time. Four people, so it goes on. Develop a team. Lastly, remember this. Time is too precious to waste, isn't it? You can waste money, but time is too precious to waste. Every minute only comes once. Yeah? Every minute only comes once. Make good use of it. Make good use of it. And in doing so, glorify God through it. Every minute, if you can. Enough of me. So an opportunity for one or two to bring their own thoughts. And I'm sure one or two have had some experiences about